You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, a good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing better. It always cheers me up to get on mic with you, man. It's been a heck of a week, but we're doing well. And man, you and I just giggling a little bit pre-show here, talking about some vintage Arrested Development episodes, which... You know, I've seen multiple times. I love the original series, right? Arrested Development came out. I don't know what channel it was on, but it came out. It was like the most underappreciated show for like three seasons.
Oh, nobody watched, right?
No one watched it, because no one really understood it. It was not publicized well, but it was just comic genius, right? And then they took it off the air, and then it got this kind of cult following to the point where they tried to bring it back, but it was just in this kind of cumbersome way that I don't know. Didn't really work for me anyway. But man, some of those early episodes were great. Bo and I were laughing about that.
Oh man, quality stuff. That show in particular.
It's like, good, man.
Have I ever told you this? Like that show, there was a time in my life where like that show was my family. Like
Did that show save you? Yeah.
Well, no, like it was just, all right. So like my brothers got me on it. They were like, you need to watch this show. I was like, I don't need another show. They're like, no, you need to watch it and then you'll understand. And then I watched it and I was like, oh, this is us. Oh no, like every single character has a corresponding member of like my family. It's crazy. Yeah. And it's almost like beat for beat, like even like ages. So I'm the oldest, which means, it's an illusion, Michael.
You know, I felt that way with the original Office. We're going to talk about tobacco at some point.
Yeah, with a pipe tobacco.
I felt that way about The Office first season in life. Those first several seasons there, right as I got out of college. And then, man, it was just balm for my weary soul in the midst of young adulthood, trying to figure it out, coming home at the end of a long day and laughing at, Jim making fun of Dwight and, just practical jokes and, the boss being an idiot, and I could just relate to so many things.
You had Dwight living next door there for a little while, but regardless, man.
Yeah,
speaking of a bomb for the soul,
that's a different series.
Speaking of a bomb for the soul, man, we are talking pipe tobacco this week, as we are wont to do here on Country Squire Radio. Man, I am super stoked to be jumping into this particular episode and getting into a topic that may or may not be controversial, which is always kind of a fun thing.
You know, I haven't really thought of this as a controversial topic until you just mentioned it, but it probably kind of is. Yeah,
we're gonna rustle some feathers, man. We're gonna rustle some jimmies. I don't know what the right phraseology is. It's gonna be an interesting one to see.
Rustle
what the
some
is.
Jimmies.
Is that not a thing? That might not be a thing.
This is a family-friendly show. I don't know. let's just leave this aside. Go
okay.
ahead.
All right. See, we've already started like completely way off topic, which is the most unprofessional thing you could do in podcasting. And already it makes me want to be like I need to tell the story about
Welcome
the first time
Squire
I ever
Radio.
Said like a curse word. But I'm not going to. We're gonna stay on it. All right. So here's the deal. Ladies and gentlemen, we have got a great show for you planned for today. First up, got to let you know that this show is made possible by the amazing support of our patrons over at patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio. If you'd like to join the Country Squire Radio International Pipe Club, that is the place to do it. Again, that's patreon.com/CountrySquireRadio. Also, we are building up to a big announcement the week of October 6th. What could it be? Well, in a couple of weeks, you'll know.
Well, it's funny. Like it's gonna be fun and different, and it'll just be something that folks can get on board with. And yeah, we'll just see how people take it. But I think it'll be great. I think it'll be great. I'm excited about it.
Well, I just think it'll be a very precious announcement. Oh yeah, like that. A little
That's
bit of
what
that
you did there. Yep.
Yeah. The kids don't know, but we know, you and I know. No, listeners don't know, but we know. All right, y'all. We're having way too much fun. Let's get to work, man. We've got a great topic. So as I mentioned, this may or may not end up being a controversial one, because as the listener knows, we are talking about what makes a good pipe tobacco good. And therefore, there is kind of something implied in that, which means what makes a bad tobacco bad. And, I would imagine one can't even talk about one without addressing the other. And, really, taste and flavor, it's very subjective. However, I do think after spending so many weeks, an entire mini series going through expanding your palate, training your palate, talking about the different flavor profiles and everything else, there is still this element of quality that needs to be addressed. Now, John David, you and I, we've had episodes we've done talking about what makes a good pipe, what makes a bad pipe a bad pipe. But you yourself, as one of the most prolific tobacco blenders of the modern age, I think bring a ton of knowledge.
You give me a promotion like every time you say something like that.
Did you notice I caught myself? Because I was like, I'm about to compliment this man. And of course, he's not going to take it. He needs to take these compliments.
I have to always say something that, you know, is off-putting or, you know, dismissive. But seriously, like maybe, you know, let's tone it down a little bit. Go ahead.
All right.
Go ahead.
All right. Anyway, point is, this God's gift to tobacco that we have sitting with us on mic today is going to be helping us understand the question, what makes a good pipe tobacco good?
Yeah, it's open-ended, right? Because this is something that there's a seemingly, in some sense, no rhyme or reason to. I mean, you've got a variety of answers to the question. And so there's some folks that look at something, let's say, as simple and prolific as Lane 1Q, and they're like, that's a good tobacco. You know, that's good. It burns well. It makes the room smell good. It's got a kind of a semi-sweet, flavorful taste to it. And so that's a good tobacco. And then, you know, you've got folks that look at that and they're like, well, no, you know, poo on that. Like I'm not going to smoke that. I can't call that a good tobacco. Like that, you know, good tobaccos are, you know, have all these other characteristics that we'll get into. And so, today's just kind of a discussion, you know, where Bo and I just kind of chat about that. What makes that a good tobacco? And you know, what kind of goes into our thought process as that is going through your mind? So
I got to ask the question because I've been thinking a lot about this lately in terms of, you know, we did the kind of the When to Acquire series and it that ever since then, my wheels have been turning because there are times that I kind of, you know, maybe, you know, it's been a particularly good month. Maybe it's been a particularly good year. I've got a little extra cash. I want to kind of spend it on something special.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, a lot more often than not, that means a little bit of the brown water. So I tend to go down to the old package store here and I peruse and I see like all these like high quality or rather high priced scotches and whiskeys and everything. And I know a few that I know to be good and expensive. And I have on, let's say, more occasions than I'd like to admit, purchased a higher end whiskey only to come down and like get back at home and like pour myself a glass and then read up on it and read that everybody says it's terrible. It's crazy overpriced. You're an idiot if you buy this kind of thing. And, you know, at the same time, there are some relatively, you know, well-priced whiskeys and that sort of thing that I find to be very quality, extremely good, especially for the price.
Yeah, sure.
So I'd like to acknowledge off the bat, a lot of times somebody might assume that price point is really what defines good. And is that always the case? That's my question.
Yeah, that's actually a very fair question. You know, as I was thinking about some of this, I was thinking about kind of the, you know, the strata of price points with tobaccos. You have what Country Squire Radio vernacular refers to as hamster cage tobaccos, you know, stuff that you find in a paper sack or something cellophane, you know, behind the counter at the Walgreens. And, you know, we've got all kinds of fancy mid-range tobaccos or hand blended from your tobacconist that might come in a little pouch or whatever it is. And then you've got this, you know, kind of strata up there of tobaccos that might come in some real fancy metal can with some jewels on it or, you know, some artwork that's almost like a, you know, heirloom type thing. And I'm not going to name any names when talking about that, you know, particular style of tobacco. But, you know, I mean, you've got some tins that are $20, $30, even $40 MSRP a tin of tobacco. And so, you know, are those tobaccos really better? Are they really? And I'm talking about 2-3 ounces, right? We're not talking about a half pound of tobacco. We're talking about, and I'm not referring to Esoterica either. I'm talking about stuff that's just expensive. And so are those tobaccos better? And sometimes they're not. I'll be honest, some of the most one-dimensional tobaccos that I've smoked have been some of those more kind of expensive, catering to folks that like, you know, things to look sophisticated and maybe a little more, I don't know, showy. There's anything wrong with that, but it's just, you know, some of the most one-dimensional tobaccos I've ever had have been from those blending houses or those brands. So it's interesting, you know, there's some awesome tobaccos. I think that as you kind of talked about bourbon and you know, I the way I would think about wine or anything else, there's a a nexus there that you have to think about of price versus quality, right? And like, how does that connect? Is this a good tobacco for the price? Is it something that, man, that's inexpensive, but that's pretty doggone good, you know? Last week on our show, we mentioned that our dear friend Bill Rutledge passed away. Of course, real sad. And it was actually really neat this past week. After you and I recorded, Bo, we had a small gathering at the shop kind of in his honor where we got together and told some stories and toasted him. And I made a big batch of his private blend and put it on the shelf or on the counter for people to just grab and smoke. And we pulled out a box of cigars, his favorite cigars, and just passed them out, let everyone smoke one. One of the highlights of the night, Bill was a big wine drinker. He loved wine. And where I just drink a lot of wine, Bill was actually into wine. You know, he, you know, followed the different wineries and the winemakers, the blenders, the families that were engaged in all this. And he knew wine. And he would always talk about Liberty School Cabernet. And he loved Liberty School. It's very, very simple. You can get it in Mississippi for $20 a bottle. But the reason Bill talked about it, and Bill was one of these guys that just, you know, he knew $200 bottles of wine. He knew $75 bottles of wine. He knew, you know, $15 bottles of wine. He loved the whole range. But he always would recommend this bottle of Liberty School because for him, it was the best value for, he would regularly put the flavor profile in this particular wine up against stuff that was, you know, 3 and 4 times the same price of that bottle, right? So and there's something to that. We went next door to the package store. We bought 6 bottles of this stuff and just poured a bunch of drink. We drained every one of it. It was great, man. It was just a fun night in honor of Bill. But you know, there's something that he hit on with that, and that's, you know, that Liberty School for a $20 bottle. It's thoughtfully blended. It was made using quality ingredients. It had a sophistication to it that wasn't ham-fisted. It was just very nuanced, but also very approachable. It's just a good wine for $20, right? And so let's acknowledge that. Let's acknowledge that. Let's acknowledge the fact that Orlick Golden Sliced is a fantastic tobacco with a lot of these characteristics, you know, for $10 or $11 a can. So anyway, that's something to be said. You know, we've been thinking about these good tobaccos versus bad tobaccos a lot more recently. You know, if you listen to the show regularly, you know, I hired a gentleman named Quinn Crawford, came on board with us earlier this year, and he's actually done such a great job that he's been able to take some of the stuff off of my load and let me kind of focus on some of the things I love to do more. And one of those things, of course, is thinking about tobacco recipes. And then also Quinn has this interest in that. And so he's been kind of experimenting on his own and learning about how different leaves work together and the, you know, ability of this leaf to pair with this leaf and what makes this leaf special and what are the characteristics of this leaf that make it, you know, appropriate for whatever blends. And it's been neat to see his kind of gears working on this. And so this has been at the forefront of my mind as I've been kind of looking at what are the blends that we have? What are, you know, we want to come up with some new recipes and, you know, I'm encouraging him to blend. I'm encouraging our other employees to think about it. And what is that? How do I communicate? Like, what is good? Like, when do you stop? Like, we've done all this experimenting, and as we try these experiments, some advance to the next round, some get, you know, thrown on the cutting floor. So what makes it good? And so we're just going to drill into that a little more. You know, quality ingredients, right? I mean, that's kind of where you start. That seems like the most obvious component of a good tobacco blend, and it's hard to define, particularly as someone that's in the background. If you're a consumer and you don't have experience with raw leaf or you know, blending ingredients, it's like, well, how do you know what a good component of a tobacco blend is? And at the end of the day, you really can't tell. But from the consumer experience, what you know is just how it tastes and the experience of smoking it.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, like, I feel like most blends are going to say, like, you know, made with the best quality, yada, yada, yada. And it's like, right, the best quality that you could afford, or the best quality that, you know, fit your budget, or the
right,
best, you know, like,
right. That's exactly. This was made with the best quality rabbit grass behind grandma's barn, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. So it's kind of like, trustworthy are? How trustworthy are you on
well,
this?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. And so this is the part that you really is super hard to judge from the consumer standpoint. There is a reason that when people go to the grocery store that they're shopping for, you know, those folks that they pick carefully over like the vegetables and the fruits and the eggs and, you know, on any perishable food item, you pick this one up and that one's not the right color, or this one's got a bruise on it, or, you know, and by the way, when I do that, I always feel like an idiot, you know, like I go to Kroger or something and I'm like looking at, like, I don't know how to judge a good cantaloupe. Like, I mean, you know, you see these people like knocking on the side of it, listening to the inside of it, and you're like, well, that sounds good. I just kind of feel like an idiot whenever I do that. But yeah, I'm sure you know more about that kind of stuff. But there's a reason folks do that. They're looking for quality ingredients either to eat straight or to put in some type of delicious recipe that they know are going to be enjoyed by people. And in the end, the same applies to the blender. You want to make sure that the leaf is in good condition, you know, that the leaves aren't bruised or bludgeoned in any way. The sugar content is right, has the appropriate ripeness. So that's something on the end that the tobacco consumer can't really dive into as much, but it does go into the front end of the process and makes a good tobacco. For the consumer, it starts with the smokability of the tobacco, right? So, you know, are the leaves, do they work together enough so that you can handle it easily? Does it load in your pipe well? You know, are you kind of struggling to load it in your pipe pinch by pinch? And the leaves homogeneous enough to where they kind of help each other burn properly? Like, do you have, you know, big chunky leaves paired with, you know, like a shag cut leaf or a cube cut leaf, or, you know, something where it's just kind of clumsy to load in your pipe? So that's something to think about, how you can handle it, how it stays lit. But, you know, blenders also have to, you know, pay attention to, can the tobaccos that are part of the blend, can they be thoroughly combined? Are they well blended? It's something that not all tobaccos actually go well together just from a physical standpoint because of how the cuts work. And so, you know, just something to think about. And then, of course, the moisture content on pipe tobaccos. You know, you've got some that, you know, are super, super dry and therefore tend to burn like a, you know, tinder box, just kind of light up real easily. And then you've got some that are so wet that they take a lot of time to either get lit, or they're constantly going out, or, you know, they leave your pipe real goopy or gunky. For some types of blends, there's obviously a spectrum of moisture content that's appropriate, right? You do expect typically aromatics to be a little more on the moist side and non-aromatics to be maybe a little more on the drier side. Going into a certain type of blend, you kind of are aware of that, right? And you kind of know, well, you know, there's a range within that moisture, that higher moisture content level that, you know, you're able to tolerate with an aromatic. And so you go into it saying, well, this can be a little more moist because it is supposed to be a cherry blend. And we know that that's going to, you know, take some type of topping in order to achieve that. Part of the moisture content has to do with a careful or an artful use of, you know, any type of preservation agent. So we're talking about humectants here, like a propylene glycol, whatever witchcraft that McClellan used involving vinegar, you know, this kind of stuff that folks apply to tobacco to give it a decent shelf life and help the leaves stay relatively moist and fresh. There's a part of that too that's artful use of that. Is it something that is just kind of clobbering the tobacco where it becomes the main characteristic, just this kind of gunkiness, or is it something that is more just appropriately used where it's a little more delicate and doesn't overwhelm the flavors, doesn't make your pipe, you know, bubble up like a snorkel. So, you know, all these are things to consider. Next, you know, along the lines of a good tobacco is a thoughtful recipe. This is probably the hardest part. What makes this cake better than that cake? Why is this person's soup better than this person's soup? You know, why did Bo win the, what do you call that stuff? The, not etouffee, jambalaya or gumbo. Yeah.
Yes.
You know, why did Bo win the gumbo contest and not the other family, you know?
International Gumbo Contest.
International Gumbo Contest, which there was a trophy. 2013. And, yeah. Right. You were like on the news and all that stuff. I'm just kidding.
Well, that didn't happen. That should have been. But yeah.
But, You know, so what is it about that recipe that makes it special? The thoughtfulness that goes into that. This has got to be the hardest part because we're humans and we all have our own sensibilities. I think in the end, it's do the ingredients work together to do their job? Is the tobacco interesting and nuanced? Does it appeal to a variety of your senses? And when I say that, you know, you've got obviously the taste of the tobacco, but the aroma of the tobacco, does it, you know, is the room note nice for your companion, but also yourself? A lot of times the smoker experiences the aroma differently than the people around them. And even, again, the variety of your senses. What does the tobacco look like? How is it packaged? What's it like to hold in your hand and to load in your pipe? And all those are part of the process that, you know, does it leave your hand sticky? Is it crumbly? Is it something you have to be extra careful with? So there's all these things that kind of go into that as far as the recipe goes. Does the tobacco keep the smoker engaged as the smoker is going through the bowl? One of the things I love about some tobaccos is that as you puff them, you kind of get these little wispy, delicate tastes that kind of come through, these little bursts of flavor that, you know, may lead you to a more salty or a smoky or a sweet experience. They're kind of dancing around your tongue. Like, what's going on with that? How does a blender accomplish that? You know, think about those tasting wheel concepts that we looked at several episodes ago. Like, how is it pushing those buttons and in what combination and how often? And is it dancing on your tongue rather than just being one dimensional? You know, something to think about. And do the flavors interplay to create this kind of canvas? You know, do they work together in an appropriate way? Are they conflicting? Are they clashing, you know, or is it something that kind of works together to make a bigger piece? And you know, for some blends, that's not the goal. For some blends, it's supposed to be a simple blend. Think of 1Q. Think of Cult Blood Red Moon that has become a, you know, real popular chocolate cherry tobacco, which unfortunately I think they're actually discontinuing, but it's kind of been super, super popular. And so what makes that a good blend? It's a...
Yeah. Can I make a gumbo kind of connection here?
Yeah, of course.
Since you referenced that. So when you and I went to New Orleans several years back, I brought you to the gumbo shop and I told you, I was like, all right, you know, this is a good place for a very basic gumbo. And, you know, it's, and so you ate it and I think you interpreted me saying it was basic as bad.
Right.
And so like you ate it like this is really good. And I was like, yeah, it's completely unoffensive. It's not trying to be anything other than a very basic gumbo. Yeah. It's very, you know, it's good. I'm not saying it's not good, but if you want to get like, you know, kind of some more experimental stuff, if you want to, you know, like it's a good kind of jumping off point because, you know, this is a good quality gumbo, but this isn't all gumbo. And there's better gumbo, but there's also gumbo that's going to like be a little controversial. For example, at the moment I'm working on some duck gumbo that I'm trying to recreate some duck gumbo I made at Thanksgiving last year. And it's been a lot of trial and error. And so, you know, it's going to taste very different from what you get there. So the 1Q, if you will, of gumbo would be kind of the gumbo shop in my opinion.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, something that's a little bit more centered around a particular taste or has a particular goal, right, might be, I don't know, maybe that pumpkin vanilla gumbo that you get like one time a year or something like that.
Pumpkin vanilla gumbo. Lord have mercy.
I'm sorry. No, I meant tobacco, not gumbo.
Oh, okay. What if we made
pumpkin vanilla gumbo would be awful.
Pumpkin vanilla gumbo flavored tobacco. Can we work? I'll get Quinn on that.
No.
I'll get Quinn. And by the way, mentioning Quinn a couple times this episode, he just had his second child. They just had
congratulations.
A son. So they have a daughter who's about a year and a half old, and they just added a precious little boy. So anyway, wow. Quinn is on paternity leave right now, and the reason the mail orders are getting out late is because I'm doing them. So anyway, just a heads up about that. But anyway, if Quinn.
They're not late. They're on the classic timeline.
Classic vintage, right? Yeah.
Yeah, vintage.
You pay extra for that, right? Yeah, people pay good money for that classic timeline. But anyway, congrats to Quinn. So I think to your point, especially with that concept of that gumbo shop, and this is a simple gumbo, but that's kind of the point of it. It's straightforward. It's not controversial. You know, and then you go to these restaurants that, hey, they got some chef that's from out of town and he's pushing the envelope and he's always using, oh, well, this ingredient is in season, so we're going to use more of that. And, you know, I made a friend up in this part of the country and he sent me some of this really small batch stuff. And so we're going to use that. And that's like, that's good too, right? Or it can be, you know, that interesting combination of tastes and aggressive experimentation. And so so to that point, we kind of are rounding out what makes this good, you know, what makes a tobacco good. And in my mind, the final thing is the tobacco blended with the end consumer in mind? Is the tobacco, was it blended and manufactured with the smoker in mind, with a specific kind of smoker? Who is this going to appeal to when it goes on the shelf, right? Is there someone out there that's going to gravitate towards this tobacco and say, man, that's good. Like I want that in my rotation, you know? And so I think thoughtful tobaccos really do have to have that end smoker kind of identified. Like, you know, you're putting this out on the shelf, not just to have, okay, well, we're competing against this other 10 tobacco company and tobacco manufacturer. And, you know, well, they've got a peach blend, so we got to have a peach blend. Well, you know, that's fine. But like, who is your peach blend smoker? Like what do they want? What are they
right? Who's
what are
for?
They going after? And are you going to be able to provide that with this blend? And if you can say yes, then I think you've got a good tobacco. If the answer is no, or there's no reason for them to select yours over another one, then you know, yeah, I think maybe it stays on the drawing board. You know, some tobaccos try to do too much, and so you have these kind of real baroque convoluted tobaccos that just they clash and they're overwhelming. But some tobaccos though do a whole lot but do it really well. I immediately think of Scottish blend from Mac Baron, the mixture tobacco that they make, that's I think it's got like a record 38 tobaccos in it or something absurd, you know, something only Mac Baron would do. But it works. It works somehow as those, you know, tobaccos are you know, blended and topped and then aged. It just works. And it creates this really delicious kind of symphony in your pipe. And so some tobaccos try to do too little, I think. They just are trying to produce something that's combustible that you can put in your pipe that is a delivery mechanism for smoke. And, you know, it's like, man, you know, if I wanted that, I might just go smoke a bowl of pine straw. You know, there's not a lot of need for that. And, you know, I think those tobaccos are made for people that aren't really seeking flavor, but maybe that's a different conversation. Some try to do too little, though. And I think when a consumer takes a tin off the shelf or out of a jar, we're talking about good tobaccos. They are blended with, you know, what is the expectation of that consumer in mind? For English blend smokers, a good tobacco, you know, they're going to be less concerned about the room note, and they're going to be more concerned about a tobacco that tends to have a medium to full-bodied robustness and also a good measure of complexity and a cooler smoke. That's what English blend smokers kind of pursue. They love something that's bold, something that's complex and interesting, and that smokes cool, is easy on their tongue. The Virginia blend smokers are looking for something with you know, some strength. They're looking for something with some natural sweetness. They love chasing nuances of tobacco and delicate flavors. It's a real love of Virginia's. And then at the end, they want either a brightness or a depth that kind of corresponds with their preferred type of leaf. And so that's what you're producing for them. Aromatic smokers, what makes a quality aromatic tobacco? Well, you know, typically aromatic tobacco smokers, they want their defined tasting note to come through. You know, if it is supposed to be an apple flavored blend, they want to get the essence of that. They don't want it to just taste like heat, which is so often, so often communicated. And if it's a tobacco flavor that's more nebulous, something like Scottish blend from Mac Baron, or even something like 1Q that, you know, doesn't have a super, hey, this is the, you know, cherry blend flavor that you're seeking or whatever, you know, is it a straightforward tobacco blend that creates that sensation in your mouth that, you know, it is a sweetness, that the flavor does last. It's not like a stick of Juicy Fruit where you chew it for 3 minutes and then the flavor goes away, you know?
Right.
Does it linger? Is it something that lights the room up and makes your companions happy because of how it smells? So, So I think all these things go into it. At the end of the day, a good tobacco is one you enjoy. And good tobaccos tend to be the ones that are smoked, you know, regularly. And they become popular for a reason, because people connect with them. So, but anyway, just some thoughts on that. What do you think, Bo? Does any of that resonate with you?
Yeah, for sure. Although I got to say, I'm a little disappointed. I'm a little disappointed by all this. As I mentioned before,
you disappointed in me?
Well, I know it's typically the other way around, but no, I thought for sure, man, that, as part of talking about what makes a good tobacco, I mean, you've talked about some general concepts. You've certainly mentioned several kind of recommended quality pipe tobaccos as we've kind of gone through these various aspects of what makes a good tobacco, but you didn't name any names for what makes a bad tobacco. you didn't name any names. And I was just curious
You want me to who do you want me to throw under the bus?
No, nobody.
Who do you want me to throw? Is there someone out there you've got in mind? You're kind of one.
No, like, no. He's not in business anymore.
Like,
no,
how do we make waves
not.
This week, John David?
No.
But I mean, in talking about bad tobaccos and in talking about that, I mean, they're, you know, and I reference this kind of a brevity, but you know, there's tobaccos that just, you know, maybe the flavor is somewhat interesting, but it smokes just way too hot, and you can't enjoy it because of that. Mm. You know, is it tobacco that's super wet to the point where it never dries out and it leaves your pipe almost bludgeoned, you know, with this kind of goopy goopiness, you know? Is it a tobacco that doesn't engage multiple senses? It's something that, you know, maybe you like the flavor okay, but gosh, you don't like the room note, and, you know, it makes your, again, tongue, you know, super hot, and, you know, you don't even like what it looks like. I mean, all this kind of goes into the experience, you know, the packaging as well. So we're just thinking about things that leave you wanting. I think that there are so many tobaccos that just, I feel like blenders put out there because they feel like they need something in that category, you know?
Yeah.
And I need to remember that myself as a blender too. I mean, this is not like, this is pot meat kettle kind of thing. Like,
right,
this is something I need to keep in my own wheelhouse as well. Like, let's come out with a Virginia Perique. Everyone's got a Virginia Perique. Well, why? Like, what are you going to come out with it because you want to make a good one? Or are you going to come out with it to fill a gap? You know,
right.
That's important. There's a reason different types of restaurants exist for that. You know, you go to an Italian restaurant to eat Italian food. You go to, you know, a French restaurant to eat French food. You go to a burger joint to eat burgers. You don't have to necessarily major in anything if you have your thing, particularly Virginia blends that are just very one dimensional, that aren't particularly enjoyable to smoke just because of a variety of things. And I think that's why you don't hear about some of those blends out there. With aromatic tobaccos, we go back to the element of, man, this kind of just tastes like heat. And how do you communicate the flavor better into the tobacco? How are you going to, you know, use it as a vehicle to bring more of that to the palate? You know, a lot of aromatic tobaccos that, you know, people are like, well, we need a blackberry blend, so let's just make one, you know, and in the end, it just kind of tastes like semi-sweet heat. I think there's a reason people don't buy that, and that those tobaccos kind of sit at the back of the shelf, you know, and they might even make the room smell good, but that might be the only thing good they do. So I think there's room for critique around the board. It's something I need to keep in mind myself as a blender that tries to practice what I preach. So,
okay. You know. All right. Well, I was, you know, not trying necessarily to court controversy. I thought I'd poke you a little bit and see if anything happened. Regardless,
hit the pinata, see what falls out.
Yeah, man. Look, the great thing is, if you've got a good quality pipe tobacco, regardless of what your favorite may be, one of the things you know is that you'll always be able to get a quality smoke from enjoying it through one of a great corncob or clay pipes from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is right. So many great pipes at Missouri Meerschaum. We love their new lineup, too, just with the merger of them and Old Dominion Pipe Company, the clay pipes and the new corncob pipes that are being produced. This week, we're talking about the Let Freedom Ring corncob pipe. It's a unique pipe that's debuted from Missouri Meerschaum in that it kind of has a different finish to it. It's got this unique maple color that's just interesting and different. It's a warm color. color. It's a Fifth Avenue size pipe bowl. It comes in a bent variety and a straight variety. I really particularly like the bent variety because it's got this handsome amber stem that just goes really, really well with this maple stain that is so unique for Missouri Meerschaum. It's reminiscent of the stain they use on their hardwood pipes, but they've applied it to the corncob bowl, and it's just very beautiful. Anyway, check it out. It retails for only $8.99, and it is in stock right now at corncobpipe.com. So if you go there, check it out. You can shop for grab a Let Freedom Ring corncob pipe. You can pick up all kind of merch and swag while you're at it, and they'll ship it straight to your door from Washington, Missouri, on the banks of the Missouri River. So go there, check it out. Tell them we sent you.
That's right, Matt. And once again, we want to thank our friends at Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring this show.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
All right, Matt, pipe question of the week coming in this week from Lorelei. Lorelei's writing in. She says, hi, Bo and John David. A few episodes ago on the McClellan follow-up, John David answered my question about the 515 RC by Sutliff in the context of the 5100 Red Cake. Thanks so much. I took your charge to go out and experiment with blending, and I found some formulas I want to try from Milton Sherman's All About Tobacco. I got a box of 4-ounce jars to put in my micro blends for about 12-ish grams each. While prepping, I noticed that the footprint of the jar is about the same as an espresso tamper. Combined with the last episode of the flake tobaccos, this got me thinking. Would there be much benefit from pressing the tobacco with the tamper instead of the jar before putting the lid on it? Now I'm following here. Lid on it and cellaring it for a bit. It seems it's sustained pressure that does the magic, but would having the leaves bunched up together like that help the flavor of the leaves meld together more quickly? DIY press when executive function permits. But until then, I want to see what I can do with the materials I've got on hand. Thanks for all y'all do, and a pipe pilgrimage may be in the cards soon. Fingers crossed. Best, Lorelei. All right, man. Okay, so Lorelei has been at it. She's been at the lab, man. She's been working on this. So I was trying to kind of visualize kind of what she's talking about. And
yeah,
but folks who may not be familiar with like coffee or rather like working as a barista or anything might not recognize this, but if you think about the last time that you went to like a coffee shop, or if you've ever ordered a cappuccino, you'll notice they have that kind of attachment that they kind of twist into the machine. And in that attachment is where they put all, the coffee, the ground espresso. And if you notice before they do it, if you don't know what I'm talking about, take time next time you order coffee and just watch what they do. They press that coffee down into that very specific type of attachment that they throw on for the espresso machine. I think that's what she's talking about here.
That's right. That's right. Yep. You nailed it. It's really cool. You know, if you've listened to the show long enough, you'll know that my wife actually roasts coffee for a living and did in a previous life. She was a barista at several coffee shops and was so interested in that and got into coffee roasting. And it's really neat because our two professions, our two careers kind of dovetail together because they're so involved in flavor and taste experience and aroma and all these these things that are just very, you know, very complimentary. So we joke, we've got the whole town addicted to something between the both of us kind of deal. But it is neat, both professions, both the premium coffee profession and also tobacco, obviously, in the pipe world, use this element called a tamper. And this tamper, you're pressing the ground espresso down into this implement. I forget the name of it. And honey, you'll have to forgive me if you're listening, which you're probably not. But, you know, you press the tobacco, the espresso grounds down into this pot thing that's inserted into the espresso machine. And that's an important part of the process. And so what Lorelei is saying is that her tobacco jar is about the same diameter as that espresso tamper that she happens to have. And so she's wondering, you know, hey, if I use this to kind of mash it down and then let that sit aside for a while, you know, would that provide some benefit? And the answer is it could. It really could. You know, as we've discussed before and established, you know, on the show, what affects so much of the complexity and flavor of tobacco is not just the applying of some type of flavoring or the quality of the leaf involved, but also the aging process. You know, things like heat, pressure, and time. These things are critical in developing depth and complexity in a tobacco blend. That's why tobacco presses exist. That's why aging is important. You know, even with cigars, you know, you put a cigar on the shelf right after you roll it, and it's going to taste very different from something that sat there for a year and a half. And there's a variety of reasons for that, both flavors melding and even chemically in the product itself, like what happens as things break down and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I think it could, and it's something at least worth experimenting with occasionally. I do think with pressing, one thing with a press in that nature, you know, if you're tamping it down inside your jar, you're probably going to experience diminished results after so long, you know? And so it's one of those things where, you know, you may want to just press it for a couple weeks or maybe a month or something. And then, you know, and then just kind of see where it goes and try it. You might want to try different, the same tobacco, but press it at different amounts or different pressures, different amounts of time. And just, you know, just see what happens. But I think it's certainly worth trying. Lorelei also, I just want to mention this towards the top of her question. She mentions Milton Sherman's All About Tobacco. It's a book that's been out of print for a while, but it is awesome. And if you can get your hands on a copy of it, I've got a couple copies that that I protect very you know, jealously because they're so so valuable. But it's a great tobacco resource, and you might be able to find a copy on eBay or something. It's got recipes in there, some real in-depth discussions about, you know, different types of leaves and even the history of the tobacco in the West and stuff like that. So anyway, I just, you know, highly recommend that book if you can get your hands on a copy.
Lorelei, thanks so much for the question. And hey, if you've got a question for us, send it into the show. That's show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback this week, man. We got an iTunes review in from M. Dutson. I guess it could be M. D. Utzon, like Doctor. Wait,
Doctor Utzon or M. Dutson.
I'm gonna go with the Utzon MD.
Yeah.
Love the show. Thanks for all the conversation that I enjoy with a pipe in my face. Cheers. There you go. Now, if that doesn't sound like an MD, then I don't know what does.
That guy's definitely got a degree. Yeah,
that's right.
No, that's great. Yeah, next comes Pastor Joda, who we know and love. He says, gentlemen, hope you're doing well and everyone is safe amidst all the things going on in these chaotic times. And boy, are they chaotic. He says, though summer is drawing to a close, those of us in the South have a few more months of mowing. It's become a bit of routine for me to load up a couple of pipes to keep me company while I tend the parcel bestowed to my care. You must have a good bit of acreage there to mow, cut the grass, Pastor Joda. He says, I was wondering what recommendations you may have as a tobacco pairing with grass cutting. While mowing, I'm pretty much always smoking a corn cob pipe from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum, and I would prefer something that requires minimal maintenance during the smoke, as my hands are otherwise occupied with a mower, trimmer, or leaf blower. blower. And anyway, blessings, Pastor Joda. Pastor Joda, great question. You know, I again, I always feel like a broken record because I'm such a creature of habit, but I smoke a lot of Virginia blends, man. I just do. And I associate Virginia blends with summertime. I associate it with
yard work,
you know, being outside, yard work, grass clippings, you know, dust in my eyes and all this, you know, just exhaustion after a hard day's work of, you know, curating my lawn. And, you know, for me, that's just part of the experience. It's just, you know, like, I don't know, whatever, you know, the smell of grandma's apple pie or whatever, you know, it's just part of the satisfying part of for the, you know, yard maintenance experience for me is the is a good Virginia blend. And so, you know, I would highly recommend our Bag End at the Country Squire if you haven't tried it before. It's a Scottish style mixture. It's heavy Virginia, bright leaf forward. It has a very small amount of Latakia that's in the background. And I'm not much of a Latakia smoker, as you know. And so, you know, it's something that is much more Virginia centric. But then it has some Izmir as well, just to give it a little bit of Oriental floral tang. And so, so you may try that out. You know, other than that, there's you know, some great great Virginia blends that you know, I could go on and on about. But yeah, try Bag End at some point.
There you go. All right. Great, great recommendation. Pastor Joda, always good about checking in on us, especially with all this crazy weather we've been having here lately.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, appreciate that. Man, let's get one more in here. This is from Gabe, Gabe Skypala. Said, while I was listening to past few podcasts, I heard y'all give a shout out to Tyler, who had recently made his pilgrimage, and that he is from the Texas Panhandle.
Yeah.
If you would shout this out. All right. Gabe, we're shouting it out now.
You're shouting it out right now, buddy.
And tell him to reach out to me. Also, if anyone in the Texas Panhandle that can come hang out with us at Golden Spread Pipe Club, they can reach out to me on Facebook and Instagram. We need to bolster our local club. Cheers, y'all. Keep the great content coming. And again, that's Gabe Skypala. And he says he's the really, really tall guy from Amarillo, Texas.
Yeah, man, Gabe came through as well. It's been a while now, but man, longtime listener of the show, good friend, and man, yeah, Tyler, look him up, Gabe Skypala, Skypala, and again, he mentions the Golden Spread Pipe Club in the Panhandle of Texas up there. So go check him out. But man, cheers to our Texas Panhandle listeners, man, up there in cattle country.
There you go. We out here.
Yeah.
All right, man. That's good stuff. Well, hey, thank y'all so much for writing into the show, especially that iTunes review. You know, that writing in an iTunes review is a great way to help support the show. Doesn't cost you a dime to do it, but it goes a long way to making the show happen. Which, by the way, if you are willing to spend a few dimes to help make this show happen, head over to patreon.com/countrysquireradio. You get some good stuff for doing it. And it also, like I said, keeps us on the air. Join up there at, again, patreon.com/countrysquireradio. You can keep up with us throughout the week. You can follow the show at Squire Radio. You can follow John David at John David Cole, or at _CountrySquire, or all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, man, I got to tell you, I feel like I misled the people because we started off this episode like it's gonna be a controversial one, and I was like, ah, no, it's pretty good. Zero controversy.
Everyone's straight. Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's part of the thing where we may have some people out there that are like, what do you mean that any kind of tobacco can be a good tobacco as long as it makes the end consumer happy? Man, only good tobaccos are, you know, use Syrian Latakia. Man, only bright leaf from, you know, the African countryside. You know, it's like, well, maybe you should go listen to another podcast.
That's right, man. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.